Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And a very good morning to you, Lynette, here with Dr. Mixon. Dr. Jerry Mixon, welcome back. We missed
you
last week. Yes, you were gone, but we knew you weren't playing. We knew you were researching and working hard.
No, I wasn't playing. In fact, I was at an international meeting of rehabilitation physicians, and it was really kind of fascinating to me. This is not my field, per se, but they had a lot of talks on exercise and muscle impacting cognition, actually helping to prevent or reverse early dementia. And so that was of interest to me. So I went to the meetings, discovered that the things we've been doing for the last 10 or 12 years, the rehab world is just now starting to catch on to.
And
they were presenting papers and, the general response was, gee whiz, exercise is good for the brain. Well, yeah,
yes.
We've only been telling you that for a decade or more. But it seems to be coming as a new enlightenment to this portion of the medical community. I did not go to speak. I wasn't invited to speak. I wasn't there for that. I was just there to see what was going on. But oddly enough, during my conversations between meetings, twice I had speakers say they were going to cut theirs short and would I fill in and talk a little bit about what we do at Longevity. So I actually gave two short talks on Longevity Medical Clinic to the rehab folks, because I guess what we do was a absolutely new and startling revelation to them, which, I thought was kind of odd.
30 years in the making?
Only 30-some years in the making. Anyway, so that was my last weekend.
Very good.
This weekend, of course, Samira is in Mexico for yet another wedding. I think this is the sixth wedding been at in the last 6 months.
Yeah, six weddings and maybe one funeral.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so, I've told her, would you please marry off the rest of your relatives so you can get back to work?
Yes, we miss her. At least she's going to different places for the weddings.
Yeah,
so.
She's Canada, first Vancouver, then the
India.
East Coast, and then India for two weddings, and then now down to Mexico for one or two.
Okay.
Hope she's having a good time.
Yes. We miss her. We'll have to find out all about it when she gets back.
That's right.
Next week. So, all right, let me go ahead and give that phone number. Dr. Mixon's in the house, and so many of you were wanting to talk to him last week with your questions. So this is the week to get in and talk to Dr. Jerry Mixon. The number to get through today, we are live in the studio, of course, 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. All right. So, Dr. Mixon, let's see while we're waiting for that first call. Anything big happened this week that may have made you quite excited?
I don't know how big, but yeah.
Or giving you hope.
There are several things that kind of piqued my interest. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
You know, there was a paper that I came across on hot water being instilled into the duodenum through a scope to help resurface the first part of the bowel in people that had that were obese and had difficulty losing weight and, you know, had type 2 diabetes and other complicating factors. And it turned out that washing the duodenum with hot enough water to basically cause a lot of the surface cells to die, and then you regrow them very quickly because the lining of the bowel is replaced about every 30 hours, triggers significant weight loss, and 85% of the people still had lost their weight a year later.
Wow.
Which I thought was really fascinating. A short-term 15-20-minute procedure with no incisions, no, you know.
And no drugs.
No drugs and no significant adverse effects. There was 14% of the people were nauseated. Some of them had some abdominal pain right at the time of the procedure. Yeah, you're washing really hot water into the first part of the bowel. Of course it hurt. Not only did they lose significant weight, they kept it off for over a year. I was fascinated by that. I don't know that it's anything we're going to do at Longevity Medical Clinic.
But you know what? I'm not going to volunteer for that one.
No. I do intend to chat with some gastroenterologists about this and say, hey, you know, how many of you guys are interested in trying to replicate this kind of study? Because it's fascinating.
Wow.
On the other end of the spectrum.
Okay. No pun intended, right, Dr. Mixon?
That's right. One of my doctors sent me some notes last week, early in the week, suggesting that he wanted to give a talk to his colleagues about the benefits of cold water immersion.
Okay, we had some questions
last week. Humans jumping about into ice water and so on.
Yes.
And I told him, you know, I find the concept personally unattractive. I don't like to be in cold water. Thank you very much. But, you know, could he please show me some peer-reviewed, third-party human studies? I'm not interested in what it did for rats and mice.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yes.
I want to know, do you have some actual studies showing that it's a benefit to human beings? Yesterday evening, he sent me some papers that I was just looking over this morning. And let's just kind of run through the titles of some of these.
Okay.
Short-term head-out whole-body cold water immersion facilitates positive affect and increases interaction between large-scale brain networks. Okay.
Okay.
The next one, the effect of acute cold exposure on energy metabolism and activity of brown adipose tissue in humans, systematic review and meta-analysis. Or cold exposure protects from neuroinflammation through immunologic programming, which I can hardly wait to delve into that paper. Here's a historical review. Cold for centuries, a brief history of cryotherapies to improve health, injury, and post-exercise recovery. Health effects of voluntary exposure on cold water, a continuing subject debate. And then scientific evidence-based effects of hydrotherapy on various systems of the body. And then there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 further papers. So when I asked this guy for human studies, he jumps right in and gets me a whole bunch of human studies.
Wow.
So that will be my task for most of this weekend.
Okay.
Is reading through these papers in detail and then following up any rabbit trails they present to me.
Wow. Okay.
So that's how I'm going to spend the rest of my weekend.
Okay. Sounds positive, though.
Yeah, it does.
It sounds like the cold immersion is good for possibly inflammation, brain.
Inflammation, brain function, immunotherapies.
Wow.
So I really hate to see this be successful because I don't want to go jump into ice water myself.
Yes.
Concept. I just find it repugnant. But nevertheless, if it protects my brain and makes me healthier, I may do it. Wow. We'll see. But the papers are going to need to be really convincing to get me jumping in ice water.
Yes, I think so. Many years ago, and it's been the 30 years now, my sister passed away about 20 years ago, 25 years ago.
Did she die from jumping into ice water?
No, but but about 5 to 10 years prior, her doctor, she was into trying lots of different things for her immuno issues that she had, a lot of health issues and especially immuno thing. I'm not saying it right because I'm not a doctor. But one of the things that she did was an ice therapy followed by a hot therapy and then back to ice or vice versa twice a day.
And this is back to the Scandinavian thing where you get in you get in your sauna and you sweat and sweat and sweat. And then you run out and leap into an ice bank, a snow bank. And I've always looked at that and said, okay, insanity takes many different forms. But you know, they may have been saner than I thought. I want to see the peer-reviewed studies, read them a little more detail, but certainly from the initial papers, subject matter, it looks promising. So we'll see.
I think as close as I could get would be to do the cold shower after the warm shower. It's like, okay, just for a little bit, we'll do the icy cold.
And I know people that do that. They run a nice hot shower and then they turn off the hot water and let the cold water sluice over their now, you know, open pores.
Yes.
Now, whenever something happens and I suddenly get ice water in the shower, I get the hell out.
Yes. Who flushed back in the day?
That's right. Yeah. Yes. No, this was, this is not high on my list of things to do, but you know, if it turns out to have good scientific basis, I may give it a try.
Okay.
Although I have to tell you, for several years here in Kirkland, down at the waterfront on New Year's Day, there's a bunch of cognitively challenged people
doing the polar bear plunge?
That's right. Who run down there on New Year's Day when it's 30 degrees and jump into Lake Washington and paddle around for 30 seconds before they come running out to be wrapped in warm towels.
All for bragging rights.
That's right.
I believe.
Yeah. And I have, we have gone down there several years and watched them and laughed at them.
Drinking your hot coffee.
You got it. Hot cocoa, hot tea. Yeah, but not usually coffee. I've usually had my coffee by then. I get my coffee at breakfast, and then I do tea most of the rest of the day. But, yeah, so I have – this has never been something that has appealed to me, but, you know, I pride myself on following the science. So if that's where the science leads me into icy water, I may follow. We'll see.
Okay. All right. A trend that's now got some science behind it, maybe.
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 I read the papers.
It's got to be really worth it, though, right, Dr. Mixon?
Absolutely. This cannot be marginal. This is going to have to be pretty damn convincing.
Okay. So that's what we've got on the cold plunge. Hopefully, Dr. Mixon will be reading more, all of those articles he was talking about. Okay. What else is making medical news? Here we are, November, first weekend of November. Second weekend of November for us.
Well, you know, the last election, you know, 4 or 5 days ago, whatever Tuesday was, has piqued my interest because I guess the election was Tuesday. And then Thursday, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. kind of put out a little screed online. And now I have to admit, I have always considered Mr. Kennedy to be a bit of a screwball. You know, I agree with him that vaccines should be voluntary. You should not be forced against your will. Whatever happened to my body, my choice?
Yes.
You know? So I have never been a great enthusiastic follower of Mr. Kennedy. On the other hand, it does appear he's going to get a significant role in the new administration. I'm not quite sure what the parameters of that role will be. But the little thing he put out on Thursday listed the things that he wanted to provide freedom in America for. Okay. One of those things was indeed your choice of whether or not you take a vaccine, that the government not be permitted to force you into vaccinations of any kind. And he said he wants to see things such as stem cell therapies and peptide therapies. And you know what? Those are some areas that I think have real, real promise that are being held up because they're not profitable enough for the pharmaceutical companies.
Okay.
And so he and I may have some common ground. You know, you keep your mind open, mm-hmm. look at it and see what it does or doesn't go. But yeah, I'm interested in hearing more from him on those subjects.
All right. Ooh, okay. Good start to the day. Good start to the show this morning. I'm Lynette along with Dr. Jerry Mixon here. Let me give you that phone number so you can get right into the call queue. 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back. This is Leading Edge Medicine. A very good morning to you. Welcome. Dr. Jerry Mixon is our doctor in the studio today. So questions for Dr. Jerry. This is the day.
Right.
1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. And we already have a call from Graham. And Pam is calling in. Hi there, Pam. Welcome. Dr. Mixon is back for you.
Good morning, Pamela. How can we help?
Good morning. I would like to know more about ivermectin, basically because I'm too lazy to do the research and I don't know if I get correct research. But
right.
I read just a little brief article about ivermectin versus chemotherapy. And there was a caller in after I called about his skin cancer. But I'd like to know more about ivermectin. Is it something we should have on our shelf this time of season? Is there any knowledge you have of the versus chemotherapy scenario?
I wouldn't say versus chemotherapy. It is turning out to be a form of chemotherapy in and of itself. And right now is being used as an adjunct with more established chemotherapies. Interestingly, ivermectin has been used for many decades as an antiparasitic. High doses in the gut because it's not well absorbed into the system right away. It kills all kinds of worms and parasites and so on that are in your bowel. But it turns out that it also has some anti-tumor effects for a wide variety of cancers. Now, you have to recognize cancer is not one disease. Cancer is a class of cellular dysfunctions, but pancreatic cancers don't act like breast cancers, which don't act like skin cancers, which don't like, you know, like, so all kinds of different cancers. And the therapies frequently need to be directed at which cancer we're talking about. But in general terms, ivermectin hits the PAC-1 kinases, which probably, I just realized, means absolutely nothing to 99% of the people listening. I'm sorry. you know, we doctors speak our own language sometimes. We got to remember to revert to English when speaking to real human beings.
Thank you, Dr. Mixon.
Yeah. The PAC-1 kinases are involved in cellular reproduction and survival. And so when the ivermectin has been tested against a wide variety of cancers now, it is slowing or stopping even the spread of the tumor so that you're not getting metastasis. Say a breast cancer is not spreading to the brain and the bones and the lungs, you know, which is really a good thing if we can stop that. It impacts the stem cells of the cancer. You know, stem cells are those pluripotent cells, cells that can grow into many different tissues. And within cancers, again, the stem cells replicate quickly and they grow into, you know, the tumor cells. It seems to damage and even kill many of the cancer-related stem cells. It interferes with the autophagy, the replacement. You know, cells, when a cell is created, it does a particular function for some period of time, and then it's supposed to die and get turned over, replaced with a new cell. And in many cancers, ivermectin seems to interfere with that process while promoting the process in healthier cells, which I find rather fascinating. So, yeah, there's a lot of research going on with ivermectin. In a sense, this came about, of course, because the administration was so anti-ivermectin, and they were, you know, they were calling it a horse dewormer and that sort of thing. And anybody who does real science knows that just because we use it for one thing, that doesn't define the product. The chemicals do what the chemicals do. We have found one use for them. There may be others. And right now, one of the big areas in medicine is evaluating common medications that we've had a long time, that we know the side effects of, that we know the ups and the downs, but doing computer-generated evaluations to say what else might they be useful for. And so we're finding things that help us in a wide variety of ways. And this is one of the ways that ivermectin may well replace its previous uses. It may well become a first-line oncology drug for some cancers. So, you know, I'm hopeful. This is obviously, I have to keep giving you the same disclaimer I give over and over on the show. This is not my area of expertise. I'm obviously and commonly referred to as an anti-aging or a longevity doctor. You know, I am generally considered expert in the field of the normal but undesired changes of aging, the stuff that goes wrong as we get older and how to fix it. So when you start talking to me about things like ivermectin and cancers, you are outside of my field, right? Except for the fact that cancer becomes more and more common as we get older. And so I do look at it, but I'm looking for underlying mechanisms. Why does cancer become more common as we get older? And what can we do as older people to increase our resistance to getting cancer? And so that's the tangential connection I've got that leads me to know something about some of these products you talk about.
Well, I was mostly curious because, and I've been jotting down notes quickly, but I know of someone who has been given an expiration date. They were 100% free of cancer and then boom, it was back. And I'm very thrilled about the right to try and this kind of scenario.
Yes.
And if something could help, chemotherapy was not an issue for him. He felt guilty because he didn't have side effects. But we all like
Wait
to
a
think
minute.
Of gracefully.
What? Wow.
He's supposed to feel blessed. Thank you, God. I got the chemo and
I
didn't
know.
Get sick. Holy mackerel.
He felt, yes, he goes, I've heard of so many horror stories. But anyway, it's been a year or so, and boom, it came back. But I was just thinking if, you know, ivermectin, I don't know if his doctors, you know, something that would maybe he could try and see if it, you know. I wanted to pass the information on to him just to, you don't know what doctors are going to say, you know. But wonderful person, and I'd like to see him enjoy the rest of his life.
Yes. Well, there are a lot of papers. And so here's what I'm going to suggest he do. All right. He get online, open up his browser, whichever one he likes, and he types in PubMed Central. Okay.
I've heard you talk of that before.
Yeah, PUBMED Central. And this will take him to the National Institute of Health database. Essentially, every paper published on planet Earth since the 1970s is in that database. So then when he goes to the search factor, he just types in ivermectin and cancer, two keywords.
Okay.
And it'll pull up papers. Now, he can specify last 10 years or whatever, but up will pop the heads of, you know, all the papers published in the peer-reviewed journals in the last umpteen years on that subject. And then if he clicks on them, and the reason I did Central is a section that gives you the full paper.
Okay.
Other areas of the database will only give you the abstract, and then you have to pay $50, $60 to read the paper. And if you want to read 20 papers, that gets expensive. Some papers are published with the condition that you can read them, you can quote from them, as long as you attribute it to the author. So you have to be able to say, you know, Dr. So-and-so at this university published this paper, give the title of the paper, and then you can quote from it and you can use it in any way you want. And so the central section is for lay folk like you that don't want to put a lot of money into buying access is a real blessing.
Oh, well, thank you for that. Well, you have been very helpful, and I'm going to be doing some research. And I haven't talked to the family personally about this, but mm-hmm. I just thought I'd give this as an offering of help or something for them to look into.
Yes. Well, but let me unpack something, part of things you said in your last description. He was cancer-free. No, he wasn't.
He didn't have a cancer
that we could find. Yeah. And we physicians are rather imperfect human beings. And just because we can't find it doesn't mean it's not there. So, you know, every cancer starts as one cell. And he apparently had some cells scattered hither and yon that we didn't know about.
Ah.
And so they continue to grow. And now they've shown up.
And that jumps the devil.
Yeah. Mm. And then, you know, the expiration date. In my nearly 50 years of medicine, I have never given a patient a prediction of when they're going to die. There are people I can say, with your condition, you'll probably die before me, but I've never said 3 months, 6 months, you know, 43 days. No, I don't, because I don't
know.
That's
cruel, isn't it?
I don't know.
Yes.
And you don't know, you're guessing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you guess, you can be wrong a lot, and why mess up somebody's life? My thing is, you've got a dangerous condition. It's probably going to be what you die from. Get busy and live and enjoy every day the good Lord gives you. I want you to have a joyous, full life, whether it be long or short. Joy.
Absolutely.
That's the central focus of living.
Yes. Agreed.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Aw. Thank you for the call, Pam. And we have some more callers waiting to talk with Dr. Jerry Mixon. This is Leading Edge Medicine. Here's that number to get in the call queue, 1-800-465-8770. We're going to talk more about cold plunge therapy in just a moment. Stay right
from
there.
An aficionado.
Yes, we'll be right back. Oh, and welcome back. Lynette here with Dr. Jerry Mixon. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We're glad you've tuned in today. If you have questions about your health, about aging, maybe there is a new symptom that you're dealing with, or maybe something that your parents dealt with and now you're feeling that, we would love to talk with you. Dr. Mixon is here. So give us a call, 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. All right, Dr. Mixon, ready for another phone call?
Let's do it.
All right, we are headed to Des Moines, and we have Ellen on the line. Welcome, Ellen.
Hello, Ellen.
Thank you so much. I have two brief things to discuss. One, I am a patient at your Tacoma clinic. Mm-hmm. And wonderful. One, I have a health condition that has no treatment. And just briefly, I wanted to talk about cold therapy. I've known and used this for a number of years. And mostly I do an icy cold shower after the hot shower. Now, you'll want to look up a man named Wim Hof, W-I-M-H-O-F. He walks up the Himalayan mountains in a t-shirt and shorts, and he also teaches groups how to breathe in icy water.
Okay.
Whoa.
All right. Wim is high on my list of people not to emulate.
Okay.
If I'm in the Himalayas, I think I'm going to wear a parka. Yeah. But okay.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, this is one of those areas that I have to plead a large degree of ignorance. And it's why I asked one of my doctors who was interested in it to send me the papers. And since the papers came in yesterday evening and I was occupied with family matters, you know, I've just kind of very briefly perused them. And like I said, I just read off a bunch of the titles he sent me. It's a subject that looks like people are doing some pretty good research in. I'm just not terribly aware of it yet, so... But I'll know a lot more next week than I know this week.
Mm-hmm.
Good. I'll keep listening. And there is a term called hormesis. And yes. It's kind of like a positive stress on the body, like also fasting.
Yes. Yeah. We use hormesis in a lot of ways in medicine, actually. It is the way that the little minor injections, orthopedic surgeons, for instance, have for decades gone in and just made little punctate injuries in cartilage, and those minor injuries result in the cartilage resurfacing and growing. Now, we do it with every time we exercise. When you exercise and you stress your muscles, you actually do induce some minor damage, and that in turn results in muscle growing and healing and repairing. So yes, the process of hormesis, the recovery from minor injuries by improving the function of the tissue, is useful and used all over medicine these days. So it's just that the cold stress, you know, I've been aware for some time that cold stress can result in conversion of white fat to brown fat. And brown fat is a beneficial form of fat. It's a fat that not just provides insulation and energy, but it also burns calories. And so people with high amounts of brown fat burn more calories even sitting still than people with the same amount of white fat. And, you know, I've known for some time that cold stress helps to induce brown fat. And so whenever I go out on the trail at, you know, 6 a.m. and I see some absolutely lean, fit young man come running down the trail wearing nothing but a pair of shorts and shoes, no t-shirts, bare legs, it's 36 degrees out there, and the guy is running like the wind, I kind of look at that totally flat, muscular young belly and wonder how much of that is indeed what little fat he's got is all brown fat as opposed to my 77-year-old white fat. But I don't strip off my shirt and breeches and run out in the cold with him. Maybe
no.
I should. Maybe I should. All right. What was the next part you wanted to chat about, young lady?
So the second thing, I have two things with my back, spinal stenosis, and the thing where there's no treatment for is kyphosis.
Yes.
And I have seen Dr. Dan Nelson at least the last 3-4 years, and I do get every year radio frequency ablation, and that does help the pain. Otherwise, I have a lot of pain in my back. But the kyphosis, I know they treat scoliosis with surgery, but kyphosis is sort of ignored. And, you know, year by year, my back is curving and I can't do anything about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. For those of you out there, listeners, that don't know what kyphosis is, If your spine curves from side to side, that's scoliosis.
Okay.
If your spine curves from back to front, that's kyphosis.
Okay.
And scoliosis most commonly occurs in the lower back, but the kyphosis almost always occurs in the upper spine, up the upper thoracic and the cervical spine. And these are the folks you see walking down the street hunched over with what used to be called the widow's hump and effectively staring at the ground because they can't straighten up to look ahead or up. And, you know, the fact is that that upper spine is a much touchier surgical field to work in. You can get away with a lot of stuff in the lower back and the central back, but in the upper spine, there you've really got some issues with nerve roots and with the spinal cord that is in the center of those now collapsing, curving sort of vertebra. So she's absolutely right. There seems to be a whole lot less done there because doctors don't want to hurt anybody. And the chances of injuries with doing surgical procedures on the upper spine is much higher. So it has limited what physicians commonly do up there. There are people who are expert in that area and who specialize in it, but I don't know anybody doing rods and so on to straighten out kyphosis. So,
do you have any specific names of someone I could talk with
that topic? But, you know, like I said, I don't know anybody that is doing active procedures up there. Hang on one second. Let me wake up my computer and write myself a quick note.
And while he's doing that, I will quickly give a phone number so that you can call in just like Ellen and Pam today with your questions for Dr. Mixon. We don't want you to wait until the end of the show because we may not get to your question.
That's right.
So right now is a great time to call. You can be put on hold in the call queue and still listen to the show. Here's our number. It's 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770.
Okay, now I just wrote myself a note that says, try to find someone doing upper spine surgery for kyphosis. It doesn't mean I'll succeed. It means I will take a look and see if I can find someone, okay?
Thank you so much.
All right, ma'am. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Very good. Okay, before we go to our next caller, Dr. Mixon had a gal call in, Sandy from Enumclaw. She's been using Relief Factor. Last spring, she forgot to take it to Europe.
Oops.
And, yes, she forgot to take it, but she experienced no pain for just a couple days. When she got back, the pain started in.
Yeah.
So there you go, Relief Factor. You can definitely tell when you're not using it and when you are.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, it's not a pain pill per se.
No.
It doesn't decrease your perception of pain. What it does is damps down the inflammation. And it does that over a period of time. And the worse inflammation you've got, the longer it takes to get it damped down to the point that the pain fades away. And then if you stop taking it, you'll often continue to do well because you've got the pain, you've got the inflammation thoroughly damped down. But now it starts building up again, and at some point it crosses that threshold and your pain reoccurs. So this is not like aspirin or Tylenol or something that you take when it hurts. You take it consistently to try to damp down the inflammatory changes that are triggering the pain long term.
Okay. So that's what's going on with that. So start back up on it, get back up on it. You're not taking a drug. What's inside Relief Factor that is so good for us, Dr. Mixon?
There's actually four different botanicals in there. Well, I guess omega-3 fish oils are not botanical. But there's a high dose of omega-3s. There is resveratrol, which is a potent anti-inflammatory, anti-senescent cell, improves the endothelium so you get better blood flow to the area, which also helps healing. And then you've got the Icarin, which is a drug almost nobody has heard about. But Icarin is most commonly, you find it in the convenience stores at the counter.
Okay.
Being sold as an aphrodisiac.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Because it's extracted from a compound called horny goat weed. And if horny goat weed is not an aphrodisiac, it should be just based on the
just
name.
Just on the name, yes.
But, but it turns out that, A, it is a mild sexual stimulant. But more importantly, it's a stem cell differentiation agent. It decreases inflammation, and it helps stem cells to differentiate into new tissues as they're trying to grow. And then it has curcumin, which is the active ingredient from turmeric. And once more, that's a potent anti-inflammatory. It helps prevent cells from dying under stress and promotes healing and growth of new tissues. So all you put those four things together, you get a pretty good, you know, anti-inflammatory effect.
Very good. And right now you mentioned before that it's stronger. And is that already on the market?
No.
Not yet.
That'll
okay.
That'll probably be on the market about April. We've actually got it in manufacturing.
Okay.
But when we have this stuff made, we order umpteen million pills at a time, which means there is a several month supply sitting in the warehouse.
Okay. So we
and
need to
so
go through those.
So you sell off the ones that are already in the warehouse before you bring in the new stuff.
That
and
makes sense.
So the new stuff will be coming into the warehouse about January. And we should have exhausted the original formula about April, and then the newer, more potent formula will be coming in about then.
All right. Very good. Okay, we hear the music, which means we will be back in just a moment. This is Leading Edge Medicine on this wonderful November Saturday, and we invite you to stay tuned. If you have questions, now is the time to get in to our call. Q 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. We'll be right back with more Leading Edge Medicine. We're back with more Leading Edge Medicine. Welcome to the show. I'm going to give you that phone number, 1-800-465-8770. And a follow-up to a question.
All right. What's the follow-up?
Okay. The follow-up, as I'm moving your camera, Dr. Mixon. Okay. The follow-up, Sandy wanted to know, would there have been anything in Europe like Relief Factor?
No.
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 No. Okay.
It is a unique product. And, you know, I designed it in response to a question from one of the physician patients. We have a lot of doctors who are patients, and a particular doctor asked me for some help in decreasing inflammation in his patients because he treated a lot of musculoskeletal injury. And so, you know, I developed that rather unique formulation as a favor to him. And then we started selling it to our patients, and then it kind of grew until it's now a national program.
That's right. That's why I see ads for it everywhere, and probably you did too.
I pay for them, so yes.
That's right. Sandy, thank you for the question. Again, the phone number to get through live today, 1-800-465-8770. All right, Dr. Mixon, you ready to talk about rapamycin?
Why not?
Okay, we have a caller from Redmond calling in. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. How can I help? Hey,
good morning. It's Hilmar again about rapamycin.
Right.
You know, you read a lot about this. You read about the cycling of it. You know, you have people taking it for a month off,
right.
And then or me, I do like, you know, every maybe like you do, like once a week, and I don't take any months off. I just do every week. And so related to that question is, why are they doing that? Why are there different cycling opinions? And also, you know, I'm always concerned about sugar and triglycerides. And so my question, my wondering about is the reason for the monthly or bi-monthly cycling, is that to bring your triglycerides and sugars back into line? Or, in other words, if I took the 6 milligram on Monday morning, and a week later I go in to take my blood test, the whole panel. To what extent a week later does the rapamycin affect my values on triglycerides and sugar? Okay.
Yeah, I'll address that along with some newer information that you haven't even asked about yet.
Ooh,
all right.
Rapamycin education. Here we go.
The reason there are so many different ways to use rapamycin is because nobody knows what the best way is. That's why. We know what the animal studies show us, and the animal studies are fascinating. The higher the dose the animals get, the longer they live and the better they do. The younger they act, the better their brains and their kidneys and their lungs and everything seem to work. In humans, we've been afraid to push the dose that high. We give animals much, much higher doses than we normally use with human beings, and much higher than I normally use with our patients in the clinic, for that matter. We know that modest doses, that is that 4 to 6 milligrams once a week, will impact the sirtuin 1 system, which is primarily cell growth and turnover and helps you to live longer. What we don't want to do with our people is to impact sirtuin 2, which results in immune system suppression, because we don't want to suppress that immune system. We don't want people to get infections and cancers and so on. So we're basically trying to do just SIRT1 inhibition. The problem is that in the animal studies, we use much, much higher doses. We impact their SIRT2 as well as their SIRT1, and they don't get cancers. In fact, their cancer risk goes down. And in the patients that are taking this as an immunosuppressant, that is, they're people that are kidney transplants and lung transplants and heart transplants, they're getting a potent immunosuppressant along with the rapamycin. And even there, we're seeing that people that are taking the rapamycin lower their risk of virtually every cancer around, which really kind of fascinating. Even though they're taking much higher doses, you know, they're up around 14 milligrams a week instead of the more common 4 to 6 milligrams that we use purely for aging. Then I saw a paper this week that said that intermittent inhibition of SIRT2 actually increases lifespan even longer. So giving people a higher dose intermittently to suppress SIRT2 along with SIRT1, you probably get even a better advantage in lifespan, which I think
so
is kind of
fascinating. So you're saying that, for instance, if you take, in my case, I take 6 milligrams once a week. So if I went to 12 milligrams like once a month, is that what you're getting at?
Well, that would be one way to intermittently get some suppression of the sirtuin 2. Personally, I use 12 to 16 milligrams every week.
Yeah, I know you do.
But like I said, if I do something stupid and hurt me, I don't sue me. If I do something stupid and hurt you, it's a whole different situation. So,
well, I can only imagine. I don't know what that does to your triglycerides and glucose, but fill me in.
Well, my triglycerides and glucose went up a bit. In fact, my hemoglobin A1C has gone up from, you know, my baseline of about 5.1, 5.2 to 5.5, 5.6. So it tells me my average sugar is a bit higher. Probably the reason it's not going any higher is that with my rapamycin, I take some metformin every day.
Bingo. Yep.
You know, metformin is also a sirtuin 1 inhibitor, not as potent as rapamycin, but it also tends to lower blood sugar and make you more sensitive, you know, to insulin. And so
right.
my personal response has been to use a higher dose of rapamycin and then the metformin to help keep my sugars and triglycerides under better control. Also, my triglycerides tend not to be a big problem, in part because I don't have a lot of body fat, and I exercise a lot and burn it.
Right. So. Okay. Well, the mystery continues, but...
It does. You know, and I'll be glad when one of these days, you know, we can get some good studies that say this is the most effective dose with the lowest side effects. But nobody knows what the most effective dose with the least side effects is. Mm-hmm. And the bizarre thing about rapamycin is it's the only drug I know of that we use with a goal of having no side effects. You know, everything else we take, if we're trying to lower your blood pressure or lower your cholesterol or do something, we give you a dose that is high enough to achieve our goal. And then we look at the side effect profile and we say, okay, in order to get what we're shooting for, here are the side effects that we are going to encounter. Is it worth it? Does the benefit make it worth the cost, the risks in adverse effects?
Mm-hmm.
In rapamycin, it's the only drug I know we're going the opposite direction. We're not saying we're going to give it to us in the dose necessary to get the result we want, that is a longer, healthier lifespan. And then in order to do that, here are the unavoidable side effects. Are they worth it? Instead, we're saying, how much can we use and have no side effects at all? We don't do that with any other drug. And, you know, for me personally, I am willing to accept some side effects, that is some modest rise in my glucose and triglycerides, and then compensate for them, with the metformin and the exercise. So that's my personal approach, but, you know, I can't swear that's the right way to do it.
Yeah, I do exactly that. I take metformin and I exercise every day. So, but you read all this stuff and you go, why do these people go on and off, 2 months on and 2 months off? And
yeah, I know. But none of them know really why they're doing it. Everybody has a theory.
Right.
You know, and they say, well, I think that if I did this, it might work better. I said, fine. I don't know you're wrong. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Right. Yeah. Well, I got my dogs on 1 month off and 1 month on, so.
All right. Sounds good.
All right.
Take care, Hilmer. Bye-bye, sir.
All right. Thank you so much for the call, Hilmer. We are going to go to break right now. Just a quick break, but if you have a question about your health, as you're aging specifically, because, of course, the show is brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics, we're going to talk more about that when we come back. But here is the phone number to call with your question for Dr. Mixon. He is live in the studio today, 1-800-465-8770. We have room for you right now. 800-465-8770. We're taking a break, but we'll be right back. Stay right there.